you, and they'll definitely recognise Felicia. Of course, that had been before her haircut. Poor girl, I murmured, stroking her stubbly mane. I'm sure it'll grow back in no time. I'd learned all about how this breed of horse was prized for beauty and speed. As noted, however, the beauty of that mane became problematic if it was whipping around at the rider. For races, the manes were usually braided into more aerodynamic but still whimsical styles. Obviously, we hadn't had time for a hairstyling session tonight. We stopped again as the path forked before us. I was growing weary, and this had been near the end of a string of directions. A lightening of the eastern sky allowed me to see my surroundings more clearly, but that didn't aid my decision. Both ways were narrow trails. Left, I decided. I was certain that was what he'd said. We moved ahead at little more than a brisk walk. Felicia's energy seemed good, but she had to be feeling the effects of our mad dash. Her type was bred for fast and furious races, not overland treks at those same speeds. When the path grew wider, I began to question my direction. We were supposed to be hiding. Had I gone the wrong way and was now heading toward one of Denham's main thoroughfares? Slowing, I gauged my directions from the sunrise. Should I turn back? I could have sworn Jago had said the left fork was north, and that matched with what I could see. I urged Felicia on, and that was when the other horse emerged from the trail behind me. It was a black gelding with white markings on its head, and sitting on top of it was my Lorandian adversary. His bearded face split into a grin, and I cursed myself for the time I'd lost, missing my turn. Now, I had no room to take advantage of Felicia's speed, or dodge the gun he held.
"Lucky hunch for me, turning off the main road," he said, in his accented Isfridian. "Just like my hunch was right, to track you down after the storm. Doyle said you couldn't have survived it, but my instincts wouldn't let it go."
"I don't know why you're doing this." My eyes darted around, trying to watch his gun and find any possible escape. "I don't understand what's going on. Let me go. Please. I don't have anything to do with this." His lips twisted into a smirk.
"I'm sorry, little one, but we both know that's not true. You saw me in that joke of an Ikori raid, and then you and Jacob Robinson were apparently pulling some scheme at Locan." He raised the gun. "You may not know everything, but you know enough."
Zing. An arrow shot out from the brush, right into the hand holding his gun. He cried out and dropped it, just as a gun was fired. The shot struck his leg, knocking him off balance and out of the saddle. Both horses reared, and out of nowhere, people holding guns and other weapons swarmed around us. Two men tackled the Lorandian, and in dawn's light, I caught a glimpse of green tartan.
"Well, well, well," said a familiar voice. "It is you. I wasn't sure when I ordered them to attack, but I figured we couldn't risk it."
Orla McNamara stepped out in front of me, dressed for the wilds, and I nearly toppled over in relief. "Thank you," I breathed. "Thank you so much." She crooked me a wry smile.
"Well, I was actually talking to Felicia, but I'm happy to see you too, Tamsin."
Chapter 37. "When Jago said there was an Ikori watch here, I didn't expect you to be part of it," I told Orla later, once the commotion on the trail had settled down. "Or so far east of the river." Orla and the others led me and the now restrained Lorandian man back to their bare-bones shelter deeper in the forest. I sat down near a cold fire pit, drinking some sort of green herbal tea she handed me. Some of the Ikori I knew from Kerniel joined us and greeted me warmly. A dozen or so Ikori from other clans worked around the camp,
glancing at me curiously. She made a face. It's not a normal activity for me. There is a situation that requires me to be here. I'm waiting for some news. I'd say you are a pleasant diversion, but based on your arrival, I'm guessing the truth is a bit darker. We both looked toward the far side of the shelter, where the Larandian man sat tied up and gagged, while an Ikori woman knelt near his bloody leg. Orla called something to her in their language and received a curt reply. "He'll live," Orla translated. "The bullet didn't hit anything vital. He probably hurt himself more when he fell out of the saddle. What should we do with him for you?" I played with the edge of my cup, weary from the long ride, but eaten up with anxiety over what had happened back at the farm. "I don't know. He just tried to kill Jago and me, and he's one of the Larandians who is disguised as an Ikori up in Constancy." Orla's body went still, all traces of warmth disappearing from her face. "Where is Jago?" "Hopefully on his way here. When we were attacked, he sent me away on Felicia." I tried to recap everything as succinctly as possible, which wasn't easy, since the story actually began back in Cape Triumph when I'd first met Warren. "I have faith in Jago." Orla's eyes narrowed as she studied the Larandian. "But this man and his companions have caused damage that's rippling through Adoria." One of the servants made a suggestion in Ikori. The woman who'd bandaged the wound overheard and chimed in, nodding along. Orla, however, grimaced and shook her head, giving a sharp rebuke. "What?" I asked. "They're suggesting we execute him, as an example," Orla told me. "And I'd like to, very much, but something tells me you'll want him brought back to your people." I suppose so. I was still in shock and hadn't thought that far ahead. But she was right. If we were going to prove this conspiracy, he was an essential piece of evidence. Shouts from the forest interrupted my rumination, and moments later, a scout emerged from the trees. Behind him came Jago, leading Pebble. All the control I'd barely been keeping collapsed, and I sprang to my feet. He met me partway, wrapping his arms around me, as I buried my face against his chest and swallowed back sobs. "Six, Jago, I was afraid you were dead."
"No one left to do the deed," he said gently. "Alexei knocked one of them out, and the rest came after you. I assume they scattered when they lost you."
I pulled back slightly and pointed. "Not all of them." Jago's eyebrows rose as he noticed the Larandian.
"I see. Oh, hello there, Orla."
"Hello, Jago." She rose gracefully. "I hope there are no hard feelings over what happened in Kurnia."
"Oh, there were a few when I found out just what roles everyone had played in my detainment. Luckily, I'm the forgiving type."
Her face shifted back to a smile as she glanced between us, noting his arm around me.
"Things seem to have worked out for you."
"They're getting there," he said, pulling me back to him. His eyes lifted when he heard a soft neigh from the clearing's edge.
"There she is. Still going strong from the looks of it, but it's a shame about the hair."
After surveying her a moment further, he turned back to the rest of us.
"Okay, Orla, what's happening? It can't be good if you're here with such an entourage."
"No," she said, face hardening once more.
"Not good at all, especially knowing what I know now. Kershiman was attacked recently, severely attacked. Not one of the nuisance raids we've been tracking. Several people died."
"Kershiman is south of here," Jago told me, "near the border of North Joyce and South Joyce. The attackers were Asphridians." Orla's gaze flicked to the Larandian.
"Or maybe not Asphridians, or maybe Asphridians hired for a purpose. Whatever they were, they succeeded in enraging both Kershiman and its neighbor, Camoiria, and Kershit. That's Padraic's home, my betrothed. One of the people killed was from an Alaran."
"The ruling clan in Kershit," explained Jago. I rubbed a spot between my eyebrows where a headache was forming. It was hard keeping track of all the unfamiliar clan and city names. So, what's happened?
Kershimin and Kermoiria want to strike back, Orla continued. They've been trying to get the Alarans to join them. It's triggered a pretty heated debate in Kershit, and I've just barely been able to convince Padraig not to. He's wavering, though. Your accounts of the Lorandians in the north have lost some of their impact after this recent attack, and Tamsin's confirmation of Asfridian involvement at the hunting camp. It looks more and more like deliberate action by the colonies to violate the treaties and move into our lands.
But it's not, I exclaimed. Some are Asfridian, but they're not acting with any official directive.
Orla rested a hand on my shoulder. I believe you, Tamsin, but others don't know what I do. They haven't seen what I've seen. If Padraig throws his support in for joining the other clans, all of Kershit will stand with him.
So what's he doing now? Asked Jago.
Well, that's the big question, she said, with a bitter laugh. 2 days ago, we received word that there was a delegation from the southern clans here in Denim wanting to talk to the Alarans. I turned to Jago and saw he looked as confused as I felt.
Why Denim? I asked her. Why not call a meeting in the southern colonies? Or why the colonies at all? If they wanted to talk to him, it seems like they'd send the delegation to Kershit.
She spread her hands out in a gesture of confusion and began to pace near the fire pit. That's the other big question. I came here with my company, and he's out there at the meeting with 2 dozen of his own riders. We expect him any time now.
Jago began his own pacing.
That's a lot of Ikori on this side of Denim's border. If that gets discovered by anyone in charge, Warren's people won't need to fake further conflict.
Jago and I accepted Orla's invitation to share a meal after that. We weren't in any rush to ride back to Grassy Hill just yet, and we were hoping to catch Padraig and learn about the mysterious meeting. When we finished eating, Orla gave me a change of clothes. I'd made the ride here with Jago's oversized shirt and no shoes. My homemade riding skirt had torn at some point, I couldn't even recall, possibly when I'd run from the shanty. The only extra outfit Orla had brought was a long green dress, edged in plaid, which seemed excessive. But the voluminous skirts were at least split for riding, and I supposed it beat my other option. She sat with me while I braided my hair, and Jago tended to Felicia. Watching him eased her tension a little, and she told me with a smile, "If I had any doubts about his feelings for you, they're long gone. I never thought I'd see the day he let someone run off with that horse. I never thought I'd see the day he chopped off her mane. Does this mean you've solved your problems?"
"No, not by a long shot. Everything's out in the open now, which feels better. I didn't like running out on him like that. But we still don't have an answer for the money I need, and I don't think I can bring myself to marry someone else to get it. But what else can I do without Jago losing his livelihood?"
"Forget the money," she said bluntly. "Isn't the man you love more important than that?"
I was tired of dancing around Mary, especially with someone I respected as much as Orla. "It's for my daughter, and she matters more than a husband."
"As well she should," Orla replied, no trace of judgment.
"So, the money matters. Do you have to get it from a husband?"
"I would if I could. There aren't many other ways for someone like me to do it, unfortunately."
Orla stared off in puzzled contemplation. "From what I've observed, someone like you can do all sorts of things. You beat back nature and arbitrate between different groups of people. You lead and manage the needs of others. It seems like there's got to be money there somewhere. If you could get paid for overcoming impossible situations, you'd be a rich woman."
I laughed at that. Hearing me from across the clearing, Jago glanced over his shoulder. His bright, generous smile tore at my heart and filled it up at the same time.
"The problem," I said to Orla, watching him fondly, "is that I'm a woman. You should have heard the ridiculous pay I was offered for..." My tirade was cut off by the arrival of a troop of Ikori in red tartan. In moments, the small camp area was packed and confused. Jago slipped through the crowd and clasped my hand, pulling me along as we tried to locate Orla again. We found her near the trailhead, speaking with a man who made me gape. My heart wasn't fixed on anyone but Jago, of course. Still, it was hard not to be taken aback by the sight of Padraig O'Laren. That might have been because he was bare-chested, just like in the classic Ikori stories. That, and his chest and arms were hard with muscles, and platinum hair flowed down his back. Icy blue eyes glittered underneath a golden circlet. "I can't believe I ever likened Gideon to Kiriel," Jago muttered to me. "I can't believe I thought Felicia had the best hair I'd ever seen," I whispered back. He and Orla were engaged in a rapid and heated discussion in Ikori. Well, it was heated on her part. I had the sense he was worked up too, but his cool and aloof manner made it difficult to tell. We, and a number of Ikori, waited in silence as the two continued their exchange. Neither seemed satisfied when it concluded. Noticing Jago and me, Orla beckoned us forward and made introductions. Padraig studied us with a stoic expression, and his lack of surprise made me think Orla had told him everything about us. Ever one to get to the point, she stated flatly, "The delegations from Kershiman and Camoiria are here in advance of their armies, which will have already crossed into Denim." She glanced at Padraig for confirmation at the last bit, and he nodded. "They should reach Cape Triumph in less than a week." "Wait, wait," said Jago. "Cape Triumph? Why in the world are they going there?" I asked, sharing his disbelief. "Not that I want them marching on any place, but aren't there problems with the southern colonies?"
"There were," Padraig replied, his voice as impassive as the rest of him, "until Cape Triumph's army was sent out to attack them."
I turned to Orla in a panic.
"Tell him."
I did, she interjected.
"I'm sure your intentions are good," Padraig began, his tone suggesting he didn't believe that at all. "But it doesn't matter what misunderstandings or conspiracies have brought us to this point. The bulk of Denim's army is coming. Their movements are being tracked. And if Osfrid insists on such a hostile action, Kershiman and Kermoiria are going to answer in kind by striking at the colony's greatest cities."
"It's madness,"
Orla hissed, a sentiment she had clearly already expressed to him repeatedly.
"Not if there's no one to defend it," Padraig countered.
"The militia is there," said Jago. "It's not like the city's completely open for the taking."
"Near enough, especially for their combined armies. I've been to Cape Triumph. I've seen the state of its militia. If we join up with the others and show up at the gates, the city will likely surrender without a fight."
Orla turned on him, eyes flashing.
"We are not marching up to their gates."
He met her anger unflinchingly.
"You can lead your people as you like, and I will lead mine."
"And are you leading them to Cape Triumph?" prompted Jago. The radiant, friendly face I'd admired just a short time ago had gone pale and tense. "Maybe you can take the city without a fight, but you can't hold it without one. You know that. It might take a little longer, but they'll get the armies back. Probably get the navy involved too."
For the first time, Padraig appeared hesitant.
"I didn't agree to it yet, much to the other clan's disapproval. I came back here to discuss it with my bride-to-be, only to be met with more censure."
"You shouldn't have left them with any question."
Orla crossed her arms and angled herself away.
"You should have refused."
"They're going with or without us, and left it to me to join them along the way. I made the best decision I could at the time, Orla."
He was still formidable, but there was a glimmer of something in his eyes that made me think, despite the sparring, he did actually want her approval.
"And it's reaching a point where this can't be allowed to go on."
It wasn't going to go on with you much longer. I flinched when that steely gaze turned on me, but I didn't back down from my argument. It was about to erupt in the central colonies. But if we can get to the people in charge, the ones really in charge, we can stop all of the fighting, both on the border and in the interior.
The other Ikori are already on their way. It's too late, he said.
Can we beat them?
Everyone fell silent at that. It was almost more disconcerting than the earlier arguing.
At last, Padraig said, from what I gathered, they were at the Yost River fort.
That's about 4 days out, just like us, maybe five, but I imagine they're moving at a good pace. They wanted to get by before the army realized they'd been passed.
You could jump ahead of them.
Jago ran a hand through his hair and gazed upward as his thoughts spun.
You'd want to keep off the colony roads, of course, but you could use them if you travel at night, too. And then you'd save time both because of the longer hours and more direct routes. Then cut anything else that will slow you down. No one on foot, fewer breaks, as fast a pace as the horses can safely handle.
I won't go there, with my forces diminished.
Padraig nodded toward his gathered soldiers.
If only the militia opposes us, we could take the city with a group this size, with a fight, but so be it. I'm not going in alone and giving them the advantage.
It won't matter if you don't have backup, if you stop it from being a fight in the first place, I pointed out. I was trying to keep calm, but it was hard when images of Cape Triumph, burning and besieged, kept playing through my head.
And you really think I can? Just by getting my army there, ahead of the others.
Yes, well, I can. We can.
Seeing Padraig's skepticism, I said, get there quickly, as fast as we humanly can.
Believe me, you'll get their attention and secure a meeting with the government. Let Jago and me help you talk to them. We'll tell them what we know, show them our prisoner, and we'll just be bloody convincing. We're good at that. Then, once things are negotiated, it'll be up to you to convince the others to back down when they arrive. Can you do that?
The challenge took him aback for a moment, but he recovered quickly.
If the leaders there acknowledge the wrongs that have been done to us and make appropriate compensation, of course. That's easy, compared to what you're claiming you can do. Your people don't have a history of treating us fairly.
They've never dealt with Jago and me, I retorted.
I was confident I could do what I said, mostly because I couldn't accept not being able to do it. If I failed, Adoria could be plunged into war. My friends would be in danger. Mary would be in danger. What I was less confident of was that Padraig would let Jago and me try to negotiate. And so it was more than a shock when he agreed to the plan. With time suddenly an issue, everything became a whirlwind, giving me little chance to agonize about what I'd just gotten myself into. As the camp buzzed around me, packing and preparing to head out as efficiently as possible, Jago pulled me aside and kissed me. It was no passing kiss, either. It was a long kiss, a deep kiss, the kind of kiss that would have scandalized my mother. The fact that everyone was in too much of a hurry to even notice proved what a state we were in.
What was that for? I gasped, when Jago finally pulled back.
He cupped my face in his hands, eyes brimming with an odd sort of wistful happiness.
Because I love you.
The words and the expression both thrilled me and flustered me.
Well, yes, and I love you too, but that's never made you put on a spectacle in public before.
He grinned.
I love you for all sorts of reasons, one of which is the amazing bravery and persuasiveness you showed with that Padraig guy. And I know you're going to do the same in Cape Triumph. The governor won't stand a chance.
Something in Jago's voice raised an alarm in me.
We're going to do the same.
Afraid not.
He pressed another kiss to my lips.
You're going to have to do it alone. Because I'm not coming with you.
Chapter 38.
The small camp was a sea of noise, barked orders, clanging weapons, restless horses. But for me, it all faded to a deafening quiet, and the echo of Jago's words was the only sound in the world. I'm not coming with you. Wild thoughts began flying through my mind so quickly, I could barely grasp any of them. This is it. This is where he leaves me. This is the settling of debts for what I did to him. Tamsin! Tamsin! Jago's raised voice broke the spell, and the lively camp came rushing back in on me. Hands still resting on my cheeks, he leaned over so that our foreheads touched. Seeing he had me back, he dropped his volume. I'll see you again, I swear. I'm not leaving you. I'm just not going with you to Cape Triumph. I took a deep breath, still shaking with the after-effects of that brief scare. Why not? I finally managed. You have to. Look what's on the line. If negotiations break down, that's why I'm not going. As soon as this group departs, I'm heading north, as fast and furious as I can. Based on when you said Harper's regiment was leaving, I think I can catch up with him. He'll stop at Fort Shawbank to relay news and resupply. I'll find him there, or nearby, and tell him what's happened. We need him to bring his men back, just in case. Jago's gold and green eyes looked past me, and he cleared his throat. Well, I think Cape Triumph should have more than the militia on hand for defence. But there won't be a just in case if you're there. You'll make the peace. You can talk anyone into anything. It probably seems that way, seeing as I managed to win you over. But this isn't going to come together on charm alone. Yeah, it's going to require a good negotiator for sure. But there's nothing special I can do that you can't with Pádraig and Governor Doyle. The strength of the evidence, plus each side's real desire for peace, will be critical. And if those fail, it won't matter which of us is there. I don't want to send you on your own, believe me. But we can't risk the city. Besides, getting those soldiers back will snarl up Warren's own war plans. I'd been physically drained all morning, and now I felt as though all my mental energy was going too. I couldn't argue against him, because I knew he was right. I hated that he was. But he was right. Staying close to Jago let us keep our conversation private under the guise of a lover's sweet moment. I don't think Pádraig's going to let you go, I murmured. Even if he really doesn't want war, he'll be suspicious if you're going off to bring soldiers back to the wide open city. Agreed. That's why I didn't ask him. I told Orla I want to take Felicia back home, and that I'd eventually meet up with you all on Dove. She knows how much I fawn over Felicia, and one fast horse won't speed up a party of this size. But she'll make a difference if you're trying to catch up to an army. It's okay, I said, seeing his glum face. I know you don't like lying to her, but it's for the best. Don't pit her against her fiancé. I know, but it's still hard. I keep trying to tell myself it just evens things out, after she cheerfully sent me from Kerniel without mentioning she knew I was going to be detained for questioning. There were shouts to mount up, and I pressed closer to Jago, my fingers curling into his shirt as I clung to him. This is it, I said. He sighed. This is it, and you can do it. Think of all the different people you've had to arbitrate with since coming to Adoria. There aren't many who can claim that kind of experience. If they're all sincere, you'll get them to where they need to go. I just want you to get where you need to go safely. Orla called my name, but I held to Jago a moment more. I'll be safe. Felicia's forgiven me for the hair. Jago kissed me, and then released my hands as he backed away. See you soon. The throng of Ikori swept us both away, and by the time Orla and Pádraig had their companies lined up, Jago had already taken off on Felicia. As I began my own journey, sitting on Pebble, I found myself replaying some of his parting words. Think of all the different people you've had to arbitrate with since coming to Adoria. There aren't many who can claim that kind of experience. He was right about that. But in reflecting over all my interactions, I couldn't help but recall how the Grey Gull's crew had nearly left us on the beach, the heirs had imprisoned me, and a suitor had tried to drown me. Maybe I did have experience in dealing with all sorts of people, but was I any good at it? Considering how fast we moved, the journey felt agonizingly long. I was worried about Jago, worried about the great task before me. And behind all of that, driving everything as usual, I was worried about Mary. Her ship was due in about 2 weeks, and I'd heard that in lucky conditions, ships could arrive a week or more early. What if hers had? What did I have to show for myself? I had no husband, nor a desire for any available ones that could improve our prospects. More than one person wanted to kill me. A negotiation to prevent bloodshed and despair rested on my shoulders. Some of the Colonial Ikori I knew talked to me along the way, but mostly I kept to myself. We were riding long days and part of the night, and no one felt much like conversation. Orla had her own concerns to deal with, and when she noted my dreary mood, she said kindly, "Don't worry, he'll probably reach us soon. He won't have lost much time going back on Felicia, and the other Silvers fast too." I smiled my gratitude, even though her concern made me feel worse. Ironically, the one travelling companion who spoke to me the most was Pádraig. He was suspicious of the Isfridians and the circumstantial evidence surrounding the conspiracy, but once he'd committed to this path of trying for a truce, he threw his weight behind it and interrogated me on what to expect and what I thought Governor Doyle and the other leaders in Cape Triumph would do. "They'll be uneasy about a group of Ikori knocking on their door, to put it lightly," I told him once. By day, we'd travelled on stealthy ways, meaning our arrival should come as a surprise. "It'll be important for everyone to stay calm. That's when I should also take on my biggest role. They need one of their own people to reassure them. From there, I'll work to get you a meeting with the governor. Everyone involved is proud and looking out for their people. Everyone has their own procedures and formalities. If we all remember that and act accordingly, this will work."
"I was uneasy when Orla advocated for you to speak for us," Pádraig said, once he'd taken in my advice. "I still am. You're very young. But I think you might be a little wise. If we all get killed, it probably isn't going to be because of you."
Orla, overhearing as she passed, remarked, "Wow, Tamsin, he really thinks well of you." We reached Cape Triumph in just under 4 days, thanks in no small part to riding almost non-stop the night before our arrival. We were all tired and sore, but that fatigue evaporated as we rode up to the city's gates during late morning. Tension electrified us all, and those who'd been slumping or yawning now sat up straight, weapons held tightly and eyes fixed ahead. We came in through the city's second biggest entrance. The other was guarded by the fort, and even if most of the army was gone, caution seemed best. We met no armed resistance. In fact, we didn't meet much of anything. The gate was surprisingly deserted, and that gave us pause, more than a fighting force might have. "We did beat the other clans, didn't we?" I asked. A horrific image of all the city's citizens imprisoned and subdued by Ikori invaders flashed before me. Pádraig scrutinized the entrance with wary eyes.
"Yes, if the city was occupied, we'd know."
Just then, a man pulling a cart passed by the gate. When he noticed our retinue, his eyes bugged out. He dropped the cart and ran off screaming. "That's more what I was expecting," I muttered. Similar reactions greeted us from the handful of people we encountered as we marched farther into the city, and I tried to put myself in their shoes, imagining what it would be like to see almost 50 Ikori entering unceremoniously. I'd probably be running and screaming too. A few of our number had stayed outside the gates, including our bound Lorandian prisoner. He was going to be vital in our dealings with Governor Doyle, who might very well have an easier time accepting a truce with the Ikori than an accusation of his son's treason. There were still fewer people out than I expected, and I couldn't shake the feeling something was wrong. Even without a full military on hand, shouldn't someone have challenged us? A scout who'd gone ahead when we entered the city came racing back to Patrick.
There's a huge assembly of people up ahead, over to the east.
Patrick tensed, and the other warriors pulled out their weapons.
Militia.
The scout shook her head, dumbfounded. No, they're not there for us. I'm not really sure what's going on, but I gathered the governor is there.
Patrick glanced back at me, and I shrugged. I have no idea what's happening.
Be cautious. Be smart.
We continued our stately pace in, and I tried to control my breathing. My sweaty hands slipped on the reins. I was afraid I'd get so over-anxious I'd faint, fall off, and wake up to a war. It didn't take long to reach the assembly, which I promptly recognized, even if the Ikori didn't. A hanging. A gallows was set up in front of the courthouse, and a huge crowd had gathered around it, a crowd that started to panic and break up as we trotted forward. I searched for the governor and found him standing on the gallows, watching our approach with shock. But he couldn't have been more shocked than I was to see who else was on the platform. Adelaide, Cedric, and Warren. Cedric's hands were bound behind his back, and a noose hung nearby. A man I didn't know climbed up beside them, and the governor began shouting for the militia, but it was hard to say if anyone heard over the frantic onlookers.
"Cedric, no," I murmured, going cold all over. What was happening? How was this possible?
One of the Colonel Ikori gave me a quizzical look, and I pointed at the gallows.
"My friends are up there. They're going to kill one of them."
Her confusion only seemed to grow, and I couldn't blame her. The talk here had all focused on behaving carefully around the Asphridians in order to prevent violence, and here we were, walking right in on them trying to commit violence among themselves. The only bright spot was that our arrival had distracted everyone from the hanging. Cedric was still alive. Adelaide seemed unharmed. How were they even back in Denham? And where was Mira?
Focus, Tamsin. I couldn't worry about them yet. We'd come here to speak to the town's leaders face to face, and now, bizarrely, we'd managed it. I had to make sure things proceeded the way we'd planned. This was the part where I needed to put myself forward as our spokesperson. The Ikori riders stopped in front of the gallows, taking the place of the dissipated crowd. As I started to edge Pebble ahead in our group, Padraig, his voice booming over the din, suddenly said,
"Where is the governor?"
I turned to him with a start, hoping to catch his eye.
That bold demand wasn't in the delicate pleasantries we'd gone over. Some of the crowd's anxious chatter quieted. Beyond the courthouse, I spied a few men who weren't fleeing. They were coming this way, steps cautious, and carried guns.
"Where is the governor?"
Padraig asked again. I urged Pebble toward him, weaving through the other riders. Governor Doyle stepped to the center of the platform, visibly unnerved.
"I am the governor. You have no business here. Get out, before my army beats yours to the ground."
Padraig had the courtesy to let the bluff slide.
"We do have business. We've come seeking justice. Your help in righting a wrong done to us." "You've had no wrongs done to you," the governor shot back, mustering a bit of steel. "We've all agreed to the treaties. We've all obeyed them. You have your land, we have ours. Soldiers are moving into our land and attacking our villages. Soldiers from the place you call Lorendy. And your own people are aiding them and letting them cross your territories." "Impossible," spat Governor Doyle. "Lorandians moving into your lands mean they would flank ours. No man among us would allow such a thing."
Now it was my turn.
I finally reached Padraig's side.
Your own son would,
I called, surprised at how clearly my voice rang out. Almost all the colonists who hadn't fled mistook me for Ikori. But I saw Adelaide's eyes widen when she spotted me, and recognition flashed over the governor's face too. I focused back on him and continued.
Your son and other traitors are working with the Lorandians to stir up discord and draw Osfrid's army out of the central colonies so that Haddison and others can rebel against the crown. It's a lie, father!
Warren had recognized me too. He stepped forward, a gun in his hand, his face snarled with anger. Swallowing, I forced myself to meet his outrage with coolness.
Warren looked over at his father. There's no telling what these savages have brainwashed this girl into believing.
The scorn in his voice, the derision, it reminded me startlingly of how so many people had put me down throughout my life.
What proof does she have for this absurdity?
The proof of being thrown off a boat in the middle of a storm when I discovered your plans,
I called back.
Lies,
Warren insisted, though he looked more panicked than skeptical.
This girl is delusional.
The Ikori near me shifted the hold on their weapons. The set of Padraig's jaw was tight. He didn't think this was going to end well.
She's telling the truth.
I jerked my gaze back as the next player in this unfolding drama took the stage. Grant Elliot, the brusque shopkeeper, had climbed onto the gallows between Warren and Governor Doyle.
Who's that?
Orla hissed from behind me.
He sells survival gear, I whispered back. There are stacks of correspondence,
Grant added.
Witnesses who'll testify. Elliot, what the hell are you talking about?
Warren demanded. I wondered that too, but if Grant could support my claims, I'd take it.
I think you know, said Grant.
There was a dangerous glint in his eyes.
About Court Monch. About the heretic couriers.
That part lost me, but it made Warren lose control. Panic and desperation seized hold of him.
He raised his gun, and Adelaide sprang forward into Grant, knocking him aside just as Warren fired. The bullet missed Grant, but Warren had another shot lined up, this time with Adelaide in front of the barrel. A scream lodged in my throat, but rather than a gunshot, I heard a noise that sounded like thwack. A heartbeat later, Warren fell backward, with what I thought might be an arrow sticking out of his leg. Grant dove in quickly, restraining Warren through screams of pain.
Six, I muttered, watching the spectacle unfold. But Adelaide and Cedric were okay now, so something was going right. Both looked bewildered and were scanning the crowd, finally fixing their sights on something behind me and the other riders. I turned in my saddle, trying to figure it out. Moments later, I saw her. She stood on top of a wagon, holding a crossbow, her expression as fierce as an eagle coming in for its prey.
"Who is that, Tamsin?"
Orla asked, noticing where I looked. I smiled and hoped I didn't start crying. "That's Mira, one of my best friends."
"This isn't going how I expect it," said Padraig.
The understatement was even funnier, because he wasn't trying to be funny. Jago would have loved it. Gazing around at the chaos and outright weirdness, I took a deep breath and was surprised I didn't feel more anxiety about the unexpected turn of events. Maybe it was because everything that happened to me in Adoria was unexpected, and I'd learned to adapt to it. Maybe that was my strength, more than arbitrating with people.
Well, I told Padraig. We were hoping to get a face-to-face meeting with the governor. Looks like we got it.
Chapter 39.
Why should we have to do all the work to clear your land?
Because it's your fault this happened,
As if we'd sanction attacking our own people. Don't blame us for the crimes of traitors, acting for their own reprehensible reasons. Like your son. I jumped to my feet, resting my hands on the table and leaning forward. Gentlemen, gentlemen, let's not get sidetracked from our topic. What's important is making sure there are no more Lorandians or rebels lurking on the border. How are we getting sidetracked? Demanded Padraig. His son is one of those lurking rebels. In navigating my way through the rougher places of Adoria, as well as in the formal ballrooms of Cape Triumph, I'd become something of an expert at maintaining a smiling face when conversation took a turn into boring or appalling territory. In the last 2 weeks, however, even my skills had been pushed to their limits. That's how long I'd been helping colonial and Ikori leaders work out a truce. Technically, the truce part was done, in the sense that neither side was going to war. But matters in Adoria had escalated to such an extent in the wake of the conspirators' meddling that more now needed to be settled than simply not killing each other. To my left, Governor Doyle's face was reddening, growing dangerously close to purple. I turned to my right, meeting Padraig square in the eye. Governor Doyle's son is in custody, about to sail back to Arsfred and be punished for his crimes, crimes that the governor had no knowledge of and which have gone against all of his principles. And it's a sign of just how strong those principles are that he's with us right now to reach an accord. Angling back to look at everyone gathered at the table, I said, "We've all suffered. Dwelling on the past won't improve that." Padraig took the hint and nodded gravely toward Governor Doyle. "I apologize," he said stiffly. "Your son's actions are not yours." Then, even more haltingly, "This must be very difficult for you." Governor Doyle cleared his throat and looked away. "Yes, well, no need for hand-holding. I'll manage. This has been difficult for all of us." In most other contexts, that exchange would have been described as awkward at best. In this context, however, it was one of the more personable ones I'd witnessed. "Which is why we all have to work together," I concluded smoothly. Giving each man a smile, I settled back into my chair at the head of the table. "Now, I think in going forward with rooting out rebels, we shouldn't be thinking about whose responsibility it is, but rather who can accomplish the most. From what we've heard, the holdouts are hiding on the Ikori side of the border. Darn Padraig, Darn Orla, your people know that land best. But, Governor, the Lorandians have impersonated Asphridians before, so someone should also be there who can determine friend from foe." On it went. Another day, another set of meetings. Honestly, though, they were tame compared to the drama of my arrival with the Ikori. The stories that came out after the courthouse spectacle were equally astonishing, all seeming to want to outdo each other in outrageousness. Warren had apparently told everybody I'd run off when we were about to board the boat to Haddison. He'd claimed the storm had spooked me with its memories of the Grey Gull and that, despite the valiant efforts of him and his men, I'd been lost in the chaos of the tempest, though it hadn't even begun when we departed. Cape Triumph organized a search party the next day, but it turned up nothing, because they were looking where Warren had told them I'd disappeared, not at the other end of the bay. Warren had paid my contract fee as a sign of his sorrow, and my friends had had to experience my death all over again. I wasn't the only one Warren had attempted to murder. It turned out he hadn't been so forgiving about Adelaide's spurning, and he'd subsequently tried to kill Cedric in Haddison. Cedric had survived, only to have Warren's machinations get him arrested and sentenced to execution. Even now, I shuddered thinking about how close Cedric had come to death that day. If the Ikori hadn't moved as fast as they had, if they hadn't thrown Cape Triumph into disarray.
That was some nice work you did in there. You've got the patience of an angel.
I smiled at Lieutenant Harper as we walked out of the meeting hall later in the afternoon, freed of another day of negotiations. I think that's where the resemblance ends, I told him, and if this goes on much longer, you might find yourself reconsidering your words. We stepped into the late afternoon sunshine, and I waved a farewell as Padraig, Orla, and the other Ikori went their own way, heading to their camps outside the city limits. They'd be back again in the morning, and I knew they were restless to end this too.
It won't go on much longer, Harper said, putting a hand up to shield his eyes from the light. We've made good progress, and everyone's so tired, they'll agree with anything now.
That's not really a testament to my skills. I stepped to the side of a bustling street and crossed my arms. You haven't heard anything from Jago, have you?
No. I swear the instant I do, I'll tell you. But I think he'll be here first. He said it wouldn't take long, and I know he wants to get back to you.
Well, he's sure taking his bloody time, I muttered. Lieutenant Harper and his men had arrived in the city a few days after I had. The southern Ikori clans had shown up around the same time, and there'd been a bit of scrambling to reassure everyone that the other side hadn't called for backup as part of some ulterior motive. I'd been thrilled, once animosities were smoothed away, because I'd assumed Jago had come with the army. But instead, I'd been told he'd lingered in Archerwood on business that no one knew anything about. The lieutenant grinned.
I'm sure his reasons are good. Jago Robinson doesn't miss an opportunity. You're proof of that.
I rolled my eyes. Oh, stop trying to cover for him with your flattery. Go put on a dress uniform so Damaris can show you off. The mention of his new fiancée sobered Harper right up. Tonight would be their first outing since becoming engaged this week.
You're right, he said, backing away. And I've still got to file a report at the fort. I'll be in a lot of trouble if I miss this.
You and me both, I said with a smile. Adelaide made a beautiful bride. She was always beautiful, of course, but that night it wasn't the glittering white and silver gown she wore, or even those perfect curls that entranced us all as she exchanged vows with Cedric. She glowed from within, made radiant by the love she'd held fast to, and was now finally able to celebrate. When the ceremony ended, the two of them mingled with their well-wishers, shaking hands and kissing cheeks. Watching from where I'd stood as a bridesmaid, I gave a wistful sigh before I could stop myself. Mira, beside me, glanced over in amusement.
Now, now, don't be sad. I know you wanted her to do better than a student, but I'm sure they'll make it work.
I nudged her with my petite bouquet. Stop. You know that's not what I'm thinking. I'm happy for them, truly. It's about time something good happened to us. Mira slipped her arm around me and steered us forward to join the others.
You've come back from the dead twice. That's pretty good as far as I'm concerned.
Her jovial voice grew more serious.
And whoever you're waiting for, I'm sure he'll be here soon.
What makes you think I'm waiting for someone? I asked quickly.
Because no matter what you're doing lately, you're always looking around for something, someone else, she laughed. And you're blushing now.
I certainly am not, Meraviana. I've just been out in the sun a lot. That's what comes of having a delicate porcelain complexion like mine. But that only made her laugh more.
Nothing about you is delicate, Tamsin, and that's what's so great.
We all went back to Wisteria Hollow to celebrate the wedding. Hosting it there had been a great concession on Jasper's part, seeing as he still harboured a lot of resentment over what he saw as Adelaide and Cedric betraying the glittering court's rules, even though her contract had been paid off as part of the settlement for Cedric's labour following Warren's arrest. Mine, though paid as well, had a few loose ends.
Excuse me, Mr. Thorne?
A couple of hours into the revelries, I caught Jasper alone by the rum punch.
A party was still a party, and he'd been making use of the time by chatting up any prominent bachelors crossing his path. He'd been about to walk away and halted in surprise. "Yes, Tamsin?"
"I wanted to talk to you about my fee, sir. I know Mr. Doyle settled it when I was away."
Jasper scowled. "I'd say it was kind of him, except we all know there was a bit more to it than his sympathy."
"Yes, sir. And I also hear there was a bit more to it than the base fee. He paid over it."
"Yes, another happy outcome. It more than cleared your loan from Usfrid."
"That's the thing, sir. The more thing, that is. Anything over and beyond the fee and outstanding debts should get split into a commission for you and surety money for me." I paused, just to make sure he didn't miss the next part. "And I haven't received any surety money."
"Well," he began, taken aback, "you also didn't get married. The contract just says anything over fees and debts gets split with me. These weren't normal conditions."
"Then perhaps you shouldn't have collected the fee, Mr. Thorne."
I glanced across the decorated yard where guests laughed and danced. "Adelaide and Cedric have an attorney friend here I could ask to help us solve things." After a long, thoughtful silence, Jasper finally shook his head and made a sound that could have been a grunt or a laugh. "Blizzards and shipwrecks haven't changed you, Tamsin. You're as assertive as ever. More so, I think."
"Why, thank you, Mr. Thorne. That's kind of you to say. Although assertiveness isn't why the money's owed. It is in the contract."
All his words suddenly played through my mind. If you could get paid for overcoming impossible situations, you'd be a rich woman.
"What?" asked Jasper, seeing me hold back a laugh.
"Nothing," I told him, just thinking that maybe those blizzards and shipwrecks really did pay off. I was in high spirits as I left Jasper, delighted to finally have a sum of money to call my own. It wasn't enough to fix everything, but it would let me get a decent stock of Mary's medicine to have on hand when she arrived. Distracted by my victory, I didn't notice Gideon until I practically walked into him. Unsurprisingly, the other heirs hadn't attended the festivities. By now, it was well known that he was breaking with them and going off to settle in West Haven Colony tomorrow, as were Cedric and Adelaide.
"Tamsin," Gideon said, catching my arm. "I've been trying to find you. I wanted to say goodbye now, in case I miss you in the morning."
My anger at Gideon had faded, and I gave him a swift hug.
"Well, you could see me sooner than you think. I'll be getting out there at some point to check on Cedric and Adelaide. And now you too, I suppose. I'm excited to see the amazing things you'll be doing with your new church. You and me both." He smiled in his beatific way, and even after all this time, I saw it still affect some of my friends when they walked by us.
"And I expect you'll be doing some amazing things too."
"I don't know about that. I'm just trying to get by, not found religions or new colonies."
"You would have been good at those things, you know," he said, growing a little more serious. "You're good at anything that's ever handed to you, but it always seems to be assisting or adapting to someone else's vision. But I wonder..."
"Wonder what?" I prompted, puzzled by this odd philosophical tangent.
"I wonder what greatness you'll be capable of when you're the one in charge and giving the directions."
His smile returned.
"There's a saying, the angels have a plan and we assist. I think the opposite's true for you."
"Gideon, it's a good thing you're going off to an experimental religious colony, because that was complete blasphemy."
"Goodbye, Tamsin," he said fondly.
His gaze focused on something behind me, and he gave a slight nod.
"Tell him goodbye for me."
"Tell who?" Gideon was already walking away, and I looked toward the far side of the lawn. There, leaning against a tree in the evening shadows, was Jago, watching me with one of his half-smiles. Ignoring the scandalized looks of Cape Triumph's well-to-do, I lifted my skirt and tore off across the grass. I wanted to throw Jago against the tree and kiss him passionately, but in a show of great restraint, I simply clasped his hands tightly.
When did you get to town? I exclaimed. You should have come to me right away.
You think I didn't? He laughed. I stopped by the fort on my way into the city to ask for Harper. They told me he was at a wedding, and then launched into this whole tale about how the